Hey A1 fans, Andy here. We're going to Cisco Live and we can't wait to see you there. If we see you wearing an A1 or Cables to Cloud shirt at Cisco Live, we'll enter you in our giveaway that includes a bunch of cool prizes like an A1 branded Yeti cup and an OCG of your choice from our friends at Cisco Press. Don't have a shirt? No problem. Head to the link in our bio and grab yours today. See you soon.
This is the Art of Network Engineering podcast. In this podcast, we'll explore tools, technologies, and talented people. We aim to bring you information that will expand your skill sets and toolbox and share the stories of fellow network engineers.
Morning, folks. Tim Bertino with you here live in the AONE traffic chopper. We're hovering high above the 404 where the traffic policers definitely have their work cut out for them today. We're seeing an abundance of one-way traffic on all northbound egress points, and our southbound ingress points have been totally saturated. This all seems to be linked to a local construction crew accidentally severing a major traffic backbone with a backhoe. Unfortunately, that's leading to a massive degradation of services all day today. The only vehicles we are seeing get in or out safely are ones that have been given an EF priority by their local authorities. We'll check back in later today as the situation continues to develop. This has been Tim Bertino coming to you live above the 404. Back to you, AJ, in the AONE studios.
Very appropriate, well-timed intro from Tim, given the Comcast outage today. That was fantastic. I can't wait till Dan edits that in post and we hear the chopper sound. You know?
I almost started to do like a, but I didn't want to mess with Dan's in post, so I just left it alone.
Oh, that's going to be good. Nice work, Tim. He is at Tim Bertino. I am AJ Murray at No Blinky Blinky. Tim, how are you doing, sir?
Hey, Jim. Good. I got to give credit. That was another Jordan masterpiece. Thank you, Jordan. I am a little bit down. About 10 minutes ago or so, my son ran in here wearing his Sheriff Woody pajamas, and Dan wasn't here to give him a howdy. We'll have to time that again next time.
Yeah. Yeah. That was cute. Andy at Andy Laptef, permit IP andyandy.com. How are you, sir?
Man, I'm great.
I know you're great, and I can't wait for you to share why you're great.
I'm great, and I can't tell anybody why.
Well, sure you can. This one's not going to drop for like a month and a half.
Yeah, I'm good. More to come.
Yeah, more to come from Andy.
Yeah.
Is there anything you can talk about?
Specifically, like, you going to put me on a spot, bro?
Like, I think you got a basketball court today. Maybe you could talk about.
Okay, yeah, we did. We got a basketball court in the driveway. So my wife got a full ride on a basketball scholarship in college. So she's So she's no joke. And the kids are 4 and 7. So no time like the present to start training for. Scholarships and Daddy wants to retire before he's pooping his pants. So we got to get these kids moving here in the right direction. So, oh my gosh. Danny can cut that later, but yeah. No, it's everything's good, man. My son loved it. We were out there tonight under the light of the headlights. I mean, it was dark out in the driveway. He just didn't want to stop playing. So
yeah,
it went well. It was nice. Yeah, it's
nice.
Everything's good. Very cool. Getting together?
Soon, I think.
All right.
Based on your new news that you know we can't talk about, but
I'm having a baby now. That's not it. Moving on. How you doing, AJ? What's going on with your life?
No, I'm doing real well. Weather up here is starting to turn cold, so I'm going into hibernation mode. But yeah, no. Other than that, doing good.
What do you do for your fire pit? How do you get wood?
I cut down trees on my property.
Oh, seriously? Okay.
Yeah. I have a ton of property, but I had a shit ton of trees, and I don't have a shit ton of trees anymore.
I'm trying to figure out how to fit a half cord of wood at my house and for my fire pit, and it's become a whole thing. So I don't have trees to cut down. Anyway.
Nope. Yeah. Just stack it nicely to back your property next to your shed or something.
Yeah. Good idea. Yeah. All right.
Temps are falling like a homesick rock, Adil. They were up in the 60s. It popped back up there today, but they're heading down. There's snow in the mountains in Vermont, and pretty soon there'll be snow all around my house, and I will be questioning why, once again, I live in the Northeast.
So I'm a few hours south of you, quite a few hours, and it's been in the mid-30s each night, Fahrenheit. It's been chilly.
Yeah,
it's happening.
Yep. I've had to turn my heater on. I'm not happy about that. It's always, when can I hold out till? Didn't make it very long this year. And that sound means it's time for the wins. Winning in our Discord channel this week is Tim McSee. He passed his AWS Certified Cloud Practitioner. Congratulations, Tim. Trackit Pacer recently accepted a position as an avionics integration engineer at Blue Origin. Congratulations, Lexi. IPv4 passed his CompTIA Sec Plus exam. Congratulations. David Macias passed the AWS Solutions Architect Associate exam. Congratulations, David. And Jay finished his bachelor's degree in IT networking. Congratulations, Jay. That's awesome. Very proud of that. Welcome to new Patreons this week, Jason Belk and Tathan Thacker. I hope I pronounced that right. Thank you so much for your support of what we do here on the podcast and being a member of our Patreon program. And also thank you to all of our listeners for your support for what we do here. We really appreciate it and couldn't do it without it. Thank you so much. Now back to the show. I am very excited for our guest this evening. If you live on Twitter like I do, you've probably seen him pop up there before. I am honored to be able to share his story. And Chris, welcome to the show.
Andy, thanks. How's everything going?
Going well.
It's exciting to finally be here.
Yeah. I know we've talked in the past about having you on here. So,
Chris, you're excited to be on?
No.
I was gonna say, tell your face.
I figured this camera so bad, I might as well just not show anything.
No, it's fine.
We just call that resting Chris face.
ROCs and RCFs.
I don't even know, where do we begin with Chris? I mean, how do we even start this?
Well, let's start at, what does Chris do now?
So I just recently took on a new opportunity at CDW in the ACE program. And so I'll be focusing solely on Azure infrastructure for the next 12 months-ish, and then kind of grow from there in cloud. So that's my current.
What is ACE for people like me that don't know what ACE is?
So ACE
is... like the helpful place?
ACE is like Associate Consulting Engineer. And
oh, okay.
All right. It is basically a fast-track program where they build out... an itinerary, education, different technical things that you have to do. So certain certifications based on your track. And then they have the soft skills side, consulting, like shadowing and things that you do of traditional like consulting engineers over the course of time to get you prepared to be a full speed like consulting engineer.
Very cool. So it's a boot camp of sorts.
Yeah. Some say it's like 5 to 10 years stuffed into like 12 to 18 months.
Oh, that doesn't sound stressful at all.
A bit intense.
Wow. Yeah.
It'll be interesting. They just changed the format too, so they knocked it down from 18 months to 12 months. So we'll see.
Wow.
I'm one of the first guinea pigs for that, so we'll see how fast I can go.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, congratulations on that. Well, you haven't always worked in tech, though.
Yeah. Definitely came from a different background. Started in food service for the last 13 years.
Wow.
So, got started in high school. We had like a career center where you could go kind of pick, you know, I wanted to do welding. I couldn't get into the program because they only took two kids. Culinary class was open. So I took the opportunity. It was a free afternoon open. You know, we got to do 3 hours a day there just cooking and playing with food. So I did that my junior and senior year of high school and like really excelled at it. Got some really good like staging opportunities, which in the culinary world is basically you work for free. and usually you're doing kind of the grunt work, the hard work, just to prove that you deserve a position.
So an internship?
Yeah, a highly unpaid one.
Yeah, yeah.
So did that, bounced around kind of my local area for a while, ended up
at where was that area, Chris? Where are you from?
So I grew up in mid-Michigan, so Midland or Mount Pleasant, kind of small rural areas. We had the one town, we had a casino. It was like the biggest one in the state. So I ended up there for about 2 years, took over a steakhouse. That was fun for a while. And at the same time, I got the opportunity to go out to Manhattan and work at what was then the number one restaurant in the world from the Michelin standard, 11 Madison Park. Mm-hmm. So spent some time there.
Wait a minute. How do you go from free shitbird guy to like number one Michelin ooh la la guy?
Lots and lots of late nights and sharpening of knives.
You work hard.
I mean, being young and energetic and willing to put the time and energy into it gets you pretty far anywhere. I sent an email. I wouldn't say easy, but they're always looking for people to come in and do free work and always try to keep a roster full of people. So I had the chance to go for a week.
Chefs work for free when they're coming up? Like, I worked in restaurants and nobody worked for free.
Well, in more legitimate restaurants, you know, like when you're working higher end and you're highly competitive to get in there. Some people go in for a day. Some people spend a weekend, a week. It's not supposed to be that way, but it's tends to go that way.
And do you just do that to get exposure, to get it on your resume? Like, hey, I worked at such and such.
Yeah, I mean, you want to see what's going on in those environments. I mean, if anybody got the chance to go step into Google or Facebook or, you know, Microsoft for a week, you know, and there was really no hard ties there, you could just kind of look around and absorb everything. Why not?
So how does one live in Manhattan without an income?
So luckily I was only there for a week. So it was just like a working vacation, if you will.
Gotcha.
It was actually quite the experience. We spent like 8 hours touring like all the big spots before my first day. And I had like broken open blisters on my feet before I went to work 16 hours. So that was fun.
Oh, man.
So is that part of a school program or something? Like how did you end up getting that opportunity?
So they kind of, like I said, they kind of keep postings open for positions. They have massive staffs. I think there was like 40 people in the back of the house. And I mean, Andy's working kitchens. You don't usually have 40 cooks running around in the back
of
the
kitchen. That's a lot of cooks. That's insane.
Yeah. Well, when you're doing like six figures for dinner sales too, it's nuts. But like, So
for people who haven't worked in restaurants, you're talking like $100,000 plus of meals serving in a night. Is that what that means?
Yeah.
Which is a lot of money.
For one dinner service, I think it was like $130,000 in like a 5 hour span.
So that's what the restaurant sold in meals in five hours. Wow.
Yeah. It was like $300 at the time just to sit at the table per person. That didn't include drinks or anything special.
So we're probably going to talk about culture later in your current gig. What kind of people are you working with, right, in a place that, you know, it's $300 to walk in the door? Like, are the staff as douchey as the clients coming in?
So that place was really unique, right? It's highly competitive. There's a bunch of kids my age, and they're not just like New York kids. They're not just kids that graduate like culinary school. Like, the chef at the time was from, I might butcher this, I want to say Denmark. But I think that's wrong. But so he had a bunch of like Northern European kids there, and there's probably 15 or 20, and they're all fighting for their visas. They're all there like this is their life. So they're pretty heads down, working hard. They were pretty willing to help out. They had a good culture there. Probably one of the better ones I've been involved in, but very robotic at the same time.
So you'd said that you got good at this really early. Did you develop a passion for it, or were you were good at it, it just made sense, so you just kept going on down the road?
So a little bit of both. You know, I grew up helping on my aunt and uncle's farm. Like when I was 12, I'd spend my summers doing that. So we had a lot of, I had work ethic, like, you know, kind of ingrained already. And then you get into kitchens and it's a lot of like hard work and manual labor. So I was used to that aspect of it. You know, and I got to put food on the table and help out. So I, you know, I had to do it to survive. And then at the same time, I found like I was good at it and I enjoyed doing it. And for a while I had a passion. A couple incidents kind of burned that out, unfortunately, but at the same time, it, you know, landed me where I am now. So I can't complain about that.
And, you know, you're right. Like, yeah. So burnout in IT is a thing, right? It's a tough, stressful environment. And it just dawned on me as you're talking, man, kitchens are tough, stressful environments. You want to see the worst of people, try to feed them expensive food.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, what's weird too, is like, it's not the expensive restaurants and the country clubs. I mean, you get some tough people there. It's your mom and pop, you know, something for under $10. People like the casino, when people are getting stuff for free or using their rewards points, like it's the cheapskates that are the worst and the cheap restaurants. Mm. You know, somebody who's spending $10 and $10 means a lot to them. So,
yeah, right.
Those are some of the rough ones.
So when did you get like the ooh la la gig? You went from like the free Manhattan come up, you know, stuff to when did you land and become a big shot?
So I was kind of doing all right at the casino. They let me go for the week to go out to Manhattan. They were really like excited. But at the same time, there was a bunch of stuff going on outside our control there. So they lost a lot of like sales and revenue. So at the same time, I'm literally on my way back from New York and a guy who runs like the nicest restaurant in town hits me up and is like, "Hey, I want you to come over, run the restaurant, do your thing, free reign." So I went over there and I had a pretty good stride going, but I just didn't get along there. There were just some value differences and things. So that was really my first like big shot on my own. Had good feedback. I didn't fit into the culture.
You still in high school?
No. We're talking like 21, 22 at this time.
Okay, cool.
Still, I mean, that's hella yeah, young to be owning a kitchen.
Go run my kitchen.
That's impressive. Like, my God, man.
Yeah. It's interesting, especially like, you know, you're typically up until the day that I left to switch into like tech. I was still the youngest one in the kitchen managing everybody. So, it was definitely a big learning curve, to manage people who are 2-3 times your age. And you hear like, I could be your mom. I could be your grandma. from everybody. But it taught me a lot of really good lessons and I met a lot of really great people along the way. We actually had like probably the biggest jump and chance I've ever taken in my life. My girlfriend and I, like I said, the last restaurant that I spoke of, it wasn't working out and, I was looking for something different, maybe take a break. I was burnt out, just bad situation after tough situation. So I was going to school. I had the ability to take like 3 months off. I wasn't working and I had somebody hit me up down in Georgia and they were like, "Hey, we got this really high end, like private dining club. I want you to come down, be my right hand man, you know, do that." And so the wife and I came down here and she's in food service at the time too. So like, it kind of worked out and, we took the jump down here. It's going on 4 years now. Ended up at a private dining club. It was extremely bougie. There was no golf course or nothing like that. Like you just came in. It was like $500 a member per month before you even ate. Crazy. So we got to do a bunch of fun stuff there. But it just, it wasn't paying the bills. And so I was fortunate the last gig I had, I ended up as the food service director for a Fortune 500 company here in town, managing like all their restaurants through the different properties that they have through town, doing all their caterings, all their big wig dinners, things like that. So that was really when I kind of got my big shot, doing the full manage of a multi-million dollar account for a Fortune 500 client. Wow. I think I was like 25 at the time. So
that's incredible. So you've talked a few times about like, you know, somebody hits you up like, "Hey, like you obviously have a reputation. Like, how did you socialize that reputation, right? Like, I'm curious, like, how does somebody living up in Michigan get a phone call from someone down in Georgia and be like, hey, I want you to come run this thing? Like, how did that happen? Is there like a LinkedIn for chefs?
Well, so thankfully, like, who was down here was an old personal contact. That course that I went to in high school, like the after hours program, it was somebody that I met from another local high school. And so we kind of stayed in contact throughout the years when he moved away. And then I came down here. But otherwise, like, all my other opportunities have come through kind of similar to what's happened now. Instagram was a big one for, and Facebook, you know, for food, because everybody's looking on there. You know, that's when the popularity, the rise in popularity of like Facebook pages for restaurants and Yelp and all those other things. And so I kind of threw myself out there. I'd take pictures, you know, we're posting stuff, we're getting the restaurants to post stuff, doing videos, doing dinners out in the garden, wine dinners, specialty stuff, just trying to catch everybody's attention and kind of being a hashtag whore, if you will.
So you're building these like beautiful plates of food and you're snapping some photos and just, you're throwing them out there for everybody to see.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, photos don't look as good on an iPhone 6 as they do on, you know, an iPhone 13. So I think I've still got some floating around back there. So we'll blame it on the phone.
Nice. That's great. That's great. What an incredible story. I didn't know the depth of all of this. Like, I knew you came from the food service industry. I didn't realize like at what level you were playing at. So what precipitated the move? Like, it seems like you're kind of like at the top of your game. Like, I can only imagine what it may have been, but I want to know from you.
Yeah. I mean, I had some really good opportunities, some that I squandered that I wish I would have stayed at least longer. Had some other opportunities I wish I hadn't taken. Got a little, you know, zealous and overzealous and excited. But I had really the opportunity. I mean, if we wanted to move, I could have went wherever and, you know, humbly probably fell in wherever I wanted to. But as you know, like, restaurants are nights and weekends and holidays. And so I miss like 8 Thanksgivings in a row with my family. And so, like, my birthday happens to fall on the 24th of November. So, like, this year, it's the day before Thanksgiving. There's been times where my birthday's been on Thanksgiving. And that's one of the biggest days, in, you know, of the year. So as I started to settle down with my girlfriend, fiance, now wife, you know, priorities changed. And then I was in a really good position where I was. As food service director, I could have stayed there for probably as long as I wanted to. But long term, it wasn't a 20, 30, 40 year option. At some point, I was probably going to have to go back to nights and weekends. And so I really didn't want to give up the lifestyle and, you know, the family time and all those things. So fortunately, you know, COVID hit and the opportunity kind of arose where I said, like, you know, I'm watching all my friends lose their jobs. I'm watching restaurants close, all these things. And for me, I was still stable in my position. We didn't have a lot going on campuses. So, at that point I had to take a step back and say, like, I've got to figure out something more long-term. I've got to figure out something that's going to be equitable, and something that'll keep me entertained, because that's one thing about food service and especially being a chef is like, you're constantly stimulated and going. And if you want to be good at it, you're constantly learning and trying new things. And that's something that I've always enjoyed about it. And so, tech's always had my eye. I've always liked to play around with things. So, I had the time at work. I started dabbling around and looking around. And that's kind of when I made that decision. Like, I need to jump into this full time, because if I don't do it now, I'll never do it.
So you said COVID was a pivot point, I guess, but it didn't sound like you lost your job or lost any money. So how did it play into you saying, maybe we're not restaurants?
So my position was contracted. And actually, in the midst of COVID, we re-signed like a 5-year deal. But those aren't like concrete. And given nobody had a clue, I mean, we had like 4,000 people on property. Now you're sitting at like 70 people on property with no intention to return. So
you see the writing on the walls, I guess, huh? Like, how long can I be in this environment, maybe, right?
Yeah. I mean, thankfully, the company that I contracted for was an awesome company. and it kind of had come full circle on me again. I could tell that story off camera because I can't name names of that company. But yeah, it was just one of those things where I saw it like, you know, before I lose my job, let me have something, you know, in backup. Mm. Because obviously, like, we are solo down here in Georgia. We're 1,000 miles away from family. We don't have any, you know, safety net other than ourselves. So, you know, I had to make a move, and it felt like the right one.
How does one start looking to figure out how to get a job in tech, right? Like, what do you do there? I'm a chef. I want to work in tech. Like, I was a cable guy. At least I was playing with things and like plugging things in and had a meter. I could read like signals. Like, how did you start, right? Where do you start? Your starting point's zero.
Yeah, I mean, I had kind of dabbled in the idea before. So cooking was always a means to an end. And I had actually went to college to be an accountant. Like, I wanted to be a CPA of all things. And so I'm like 6 classes from getting my bachelor's in accounting. And I had a local contact who ran his own accounting firm. And he was like, you know, come in, sit down, we'll talk. I sit there and he's like, you're a little too old to become an accountant. And I was like 23 at this time. So I was like, okay, I guess this bachelor's degree wasn't worth it.
You're too old to be an accountant at 23. Is that what he said?
Yeah. He told me by the time I set for my like CPA and got everything, I'd be like 26 or 27 and I'd be too old, entering the game too late. I was like, okay.
All right.
Wow.
So, I had taken a couple of computer classes in college though, and dabbled around with the idea. I had been introduced to Python, a couple other things. And of all things, it's probably about a year before this happened, I'd come across like network check videos. This was like in his early days. And so I had remembered that when I came back around it, I was like looking through my YouTube history. I'm like, I know this guy's in here somewhere. So I found it and I just started going through that. And I was like, I need to, you know, if I'm going to figure out where I go, I need to figure out what I want my specialty to be. So I just started playing around with different things. And like being a sysadmin had like, didn't sound fun at all. Programming was not going to be my thing. Like, I like programming. And I like playing with that like DevOps side. But that seemed like a really steep curve. And one day I was sitting there and the internet went out. And I was like, I need to figure this out. I have no idea how it works. And so it just kind of started to snowball on it. And that's when I decided to like look into networking.
So did you really even have anybody to bounce ideas off of or ask questions of? It sounds like you were doing a lot of this on your own.
For the most part, I had a colleague who was pretty good with computers. He's built, you know, a couple, played around with a bunch of stuff over the last 20 years. And so I could ping like basic questions off of him, which was really helpful to kind of get the ball rolling. And then after that, it was just jumping in head first, spending hours upon hours with like a headache trying to figure out what was going on and what was what and how things were interconnecting. And so it was kind of a solo show.
Yeah, you weren't connected to any kind of community yet, right? You didn't know that it was out there.
At that point, no.
Right.
And how far into the learning on your own, the dabbling, the trying different things, did you decide that you were going to try to apply for something? And how did that work?
I didn't apply for anything just because I knew that there was going to be like a massive pay cut going from, you know, being in a director position to jumping over. So I was like, I know that I, at least for now, I have time to build up a skill set. So I think the first time I applied was actually the job offer was made to me, you know, when Franks reached out. But other than that, like the first time I applied, I got the job, thankfully.
So was this a long game for you? Because anytime I hear somebody say I took a pay cut to pivot, it always gets my attention, right? Like, who's looking to make less money? You're an established guy. You had a propensity to be a great chef. You're running stuff. Like, that's a big risk or a big move. I mean, I get the insight that you had with COVID and maybe, you know, I look into tech, which is this thing, but how do you, like, it's just you and your wife, you're on your own, you're 1,000 miles away from family and you're going to take a pay cut. That's a big risk, right?
Yeah. I mean, thankfully we were in like a fortunate position where, you know, I was making enough money where we had a, you know, a good buffer. but it's, I mean, it's as tight as it can be kind of thing. You know, we had to do some things like get rid of some toys, sell a truck, sure. You know, cut back on all the fun activities. But I look at it, you know, 2, 3, 5 years down the road, if I can break even to where I was and, you know, potentially double what I was making, then in the long run, it'll be worth it. But
yeah, it sounds like you had her support, right? She was board.
And that's what I wanted to bring up. Were you dating, engaged, or married at this point?
So the entire time we've been married.
Okay.
Since I've started this journey.
What were those conversations like when...
Hey, honey, guess what? Yeah, I'm going to quit my job and make less money. Isn't this cool? Network Chuck told me to do it right now.
and that's kind of what I wanted to know. Could she kind of see the writing on the wall with you that, hey, you were thinking you might want to pivot, or did you kind of keep that to yourself?
No, yeah, we have an extremely open relationship and communication. And so over the years, she kind of knew. And I've been open about that. Like, you know, long term, this isn't it. Like, it's fun now, but is it when I'm 40 or if we have kids, is this something that I want to be doing? And so when I started to tell her about it, I mean, she, you know, all my other kooky, crazy ideas, she was just like, okay. And what's funny about that is, like, I circled back with her after, of course, everything started happening. I was pulling my hair out because it was a whole bunch of stuff I didn't know when I took on the Frink's, like, position doing contract work. And she's like, I don't know. And, like, the next thing you know, like, I got the network admin position. And she's like, no, I wasn't sold that you were going to do this for the first couple months. And then when I started seeing you 4, 6, 8 hours a day, like after work in the office, like studying, when I saw you like sitting on the couch with headphones and watching videos, like falling asleep, watching videos and doing stuff, she's like, I knew you were committed and I knew if you were going to do it, it was going to happen. So.
Hmm.
Wow.
There's a lesson in that, right? Like you can make that decision and commit to something and just everybody in this industry, right? Like you put your head down and you just grind away and you have to do it in your spare time and nights, weekends, like whatever, like just, yeah, it's a lot of work, right? To break in sometimes.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's one thing, like, you know, posting on Twitter and Discord and all that, like all the fun stuff and the wins and things like that is always exciting. But like, I think one thing to be like proud of at Share is like, you know, the fails and the grind as well, because like I would sit at work and all my downtime and read and like go home at night and like give up, you know, family time or time with the dogs, playing video games, like going on trips, you know, committing my time to that. And so it was a sacrifice. I mean, fortunately, things have fallen in my lap, if you will. You know, I've been very fortunate in that aspect, but, you know, the hard work's there. And if you're willing to put it in, I think, you know, you'll be repaid for it.
Shows passion, right? Like, who the hell is going to do that if they're not interested and into it? You know, like, you just can't. You can't long term fake something like that. Like, oh, right. Now subnetting, like, just, you know, one thing after another. I mean, you really got to be interested, right?
And even at that, I mean, like, I'm like super excited about like Terraform and infrastructure as code right now, and like every day I'm pulling it up and doing it. I'm like, I got to step away from this today before I burn myself out, because like, too much of a good thing, you know?
Right. Hey, A1 fans, AJ here for NetAlly. Never heard of NetAlly? Sure you have. They came from the same group of engineers that brought us network tools from Fluke Networks, NetScout, and now they're NetAlly. They know networking. I'm a network engineer for a partner, and when I go to customers and see they use NetAlly, I know it's going to be so much easier to troubleshoot issues we might run into. The name may have changed to NetAlly, but the way they build tools hasn't changed a bit. They ask, what would a network engineer want to help make their job faster and easier? And then they go build it, just like this Etherscope NXG. NetAlly is here to help. NetAlly, simplicity, visibility, collaboration. Visit netally.com today. Now back to the show.
So I kind of want to take a step back. Like, let's talk about what it was like to try to break into that first tech job. Like, you'd been studying for a while, you're building up the skills. You know, so let's see, like, what was the job? What was the process? What was that like? Like, obviously somebody saw, like, you know, that they had an opportunity to present to you and they took a chance on you.
Yeah. The first time, it was interesting because I was sitting on Twitter, like at work the one day, and all of a sudden I get like a DM from some random guy, and he's like, "Hey, I think I have an opportunity for you. You know, here's my WhatsApp number. Get a hold of me." It's like, okay. I mean, you know, this could be fake, but if it's 5 or 10 minutes of my time, what's 5 or 10 minutes of my time? So I get a hold of this guy, and like, as I'm on the phone with him, I'm looking him up, and like everything he's saying is true. He's like a former Cisco guy. He, you know, worked kind of high up for like 18 years there, moved back to Europe, started his own like network automation company. They, you know, they're kind of been up and running for like 4 years now. I'm like, okay, this sounds legit, but everything he's saying is like way over my head. And he's like, "Don't worry, like, you know, we just need some help and we'll help you along the way. I just want to give you a shot because you look like energetic and, you know, I like that you're trying and that you're willing to put yourself out there." So,
wait a minute. There's secret sauce here.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not qualified. You don't have the skills, but he sees something in you and he's like, "I'm going to teach you." This is, I hear this a lot, right? People say, "Oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not qualified." Like, you reached. There's something to, I mean, I look at my own story. There's something about reaching beyond your comfort level and saying yes to things you're not sure you can do. Because on the other end of that conversation, that person sees something in you, believes in you. You know, like, I feel like an imposter a lot of times. And one time I had a director be like, "Oh yeah, sure. Everybody has it wrong. And you're so clever. You have everybody fooled," right? Like, this guy saw something in you and pulled you into this. So what's the secret sauce? What did he see? He saw your commitment. He saw your passion. He saw you're working hard. Like, how did you pull that off? Because that's no joke, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got to be honest out there and tell people what you're doing. I mean, even if it's not big, exciting stuff, like, you know, I came from cooking and now I'm practicing subnetting. Here I am, like, trying to throw a physical lab together, even though I have no idea like what Raman is. And the last guy doesn't know what the password was. Like, you know, just, I think networking is one of the biggest things that people like undervalue. And I don't mean in the physical sense. I mean, like, you know, how we've all connected.
He found you on Twitter, you said?
Yeah.
And on Twitter, you had been posting your study journey, your lab building, you're sharing it, right? Saying, yeah, this is what I'm doing. Okay.
All my interactions, I think I posted some videos like wiring up my physical lab and trying to go through some things, asking questions, kind of posting whatever chapter I was on, things like that. And he had followed me for like a month and I didn't even realize it. And he was, you know, he's like, "Hey, I've been watching your journey. I think it's really cool. I think, you know, I want to take a chance just because you look like somebody who will take advantage of it."
Did you have any certifications?
No.
Okay. So everyone out listening who's trying to figure out how to break into IT or networking, no certifications, no computer science degree, no experience, but you made the decision, you made a commitment, you started grinding away, you shared your journey with the community, and somebody saw your passion and your drive and your interest and gave you a job, right? Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah. Right? I mean, I was getting paid to do technical documentation and troubleshooting for network automation tools for a company halfway around the world, you know? And I had never logged into an IDE for more than 10 minutes. And I had no idea what Git was or how to pull down a repo. I pretty much sat there for a week, couldn't get on the VPN, although the instructions were wrong. So
so if you weren't connected to the tech community and you weren't sharing and writing your story and making videos, that job, it doesn't sound like it would have happened, right? You needed to tell the world what you were doing for this guy to be able to find you, right?
Yeah. I mean, without the network piece, without the community piece, I mean, I wouldn't be here at all. It's, you know, it helped with that because somebody was watching and was at the right place at the right time, especially the way, you know, Twitter algorithms work and things like that. I was fortunate in that aspect. You know, and then at the same time, I like to end up in this community as well was just through random like Spotify searches, looking for podcasts and things like that. And it was, I think you guys were only a couple months in too. So it was by happenstance that I came across that. And like, if you're out there, don't be afraid to like throw whatever you're working on out there. Half the time I was just throwing like, "Hey, this is a chapter I'm working on." And somebody would pipe in and like, "Hey, if you need help," or, "Hey, this is a really good method," or something like that. I mean, I got a lot of really valuable tidbits that way, just like sharing what I was doing for the day.
I'm like still trying to process everything here. Like, this is such an incredible journey, and incredibly short too. So like, when did you, like, you know, door to door, when did you leave the cooking industry, and when did you start in the tech industry? Like, how are we talking, months, years, decades? Not decades, I know, but
are you talking like start of like the study journey, or just like,
well, I like from the time you left the your position working in the cooking or food industry to landing your first tech job.
Can we start where the decision was made? When you made a decision that you wanted to work in tech, and you were going to start taking action from that decision till you landed that job, how long did that take? Job.
It was February of this year, end of February, that I landed CCNA. It was on a Friday.
You did have your CCNA. I wanted to ask you about certs.
So I got the first contract gig before my CCNA. And then about a month in, I landed my CCNA. And then I took about, I took about 2 months. And I was just like, I got to do it. If, you know, I don't want to start losing information. I want to make the jump. Financially, we were able to make some decisions that allowed it. And so by, let me think about this. May into early June, I made the decision to start applying locally or for remote positions. And I think I applied to about a half dozen or so before I got a call back.
It was less than a year.
Yeah, so about 3 months.
I thought, yeah. February to May. So you made a decision in February. You got a gig in May. It's, you're one of those guys that's hard to like, Chris.
I've been extremely blessed and fortunate for the opportunities that have fallen my way.
So that first consulting company, is that something you're still doing on the side? Are you still working with them?
So I was with them for about 6 months. And as I transitioned over, because I did transition over to the DoD and things like that, it was just best interest to not have ties to foreign companies.
Was that so? That was the automation guy, right, from Europe? Okay, and you started with technical documentation. Is that what you said? Is that what you were working on?
Yeah. So, like, all of their on their website, all their documentation, all their white papers, everything like that, I was tasked with restructuring, rebuilding, and putting a less technical spin on it. And at the same time, I was supposed to study it so that I could start helping with like troubleshooting projects.
Gotcha. So from there, where did you go next?
So after that, I ended up, it was July of this year, ended up with the DoD in a local office here on base as a network admin. And so kind of just a, it was an interesting setup, just the way everything's going, but there was like three local networks, nothing too complicated. And it was very slow, very, very slow.
How do you get a job at the DoD? Aren't they like military people, or like, did you have to get clearances? How does that happen?
Yeah, so got a clearance, which ironically or coincidentally, my clearance showed up on my last day with them. But
but you have to be sponsored to get a clearance. Like, who sponsored you?
Yeah, so the contracting company the company that I contracted through sponsored, and then we worked with the DoD, and then the government too, or the government and the military on the project that they had going on. So it was kind of a cool little setup. Got to see some different things. Had a really slow walk into stuff. But then again, there's a lot of red tape there with DoD and, like you said, having to get a clearance and things like that. So it took a while to get rolling. And then I was only a couple weeks in. I was like 2 or 3 weeks in. And the former network engineer, who was like the CISO at the time, was like talking to me. He's like, how do you like it? And I was like, yeah, you know, it's good. It's smaller than I expected, but, you know, that's fine. You know, do everything that I can. And he kind of goes, yeah, I know you're going to outgrow it at some point. It's kind of small. It's kind of slow. Not a lot changes around here. So all the big projects are kind of in place, unless you have to like switch out a switch or something like that. Something dramatic happens. But he goes, so I don't foresee you being here more than like a year and a half or 2 years because you'll probably outgrow it. Hmm. And so that was kind of like a, I don't want to say a red flag, but it kind of like a light went off. And I was like, well, if I'm going to put a year and a half or 2 years in here, you know, where do I want to be in a year and a half or 2 years, or where else could I be? And so I just kind of had that thought. And then about a week later, I saw somebody posting about a associate consulting engineer position that kind of caught my attention.
A friend in the community, maybe? I think the fact that you even had that thought is kind of something, not kind of, but is definitely something special about kind of your mentality and how you've gone through your career is you got this job and you're already thinking about your next step and your long game and that kind of thing. And that's not something you see in everybody. So that, I think that says a lot about you and your character, that you were already kind of seeing, hey, this place is kind of slow moving. I'm trying to build a life out of being in the tech industry or doing tech related jobs. Maybe I need to already start looking at the next thing. So that was really cool to hear you analyze that kind of right as you got into One Door.
Yeah, it was one of those, like, you know, you get an opportunity and then the better opportunity always comes up right after. And it was a hard decision. Shout out to Wheezy, NetSec Wheezy, for the opportunity. I had kind of just inquired about what was going on after he posted it and just what it was. And so I sat back for about 2 weeks and thought it over, talked to the wife, and I was like, you know, this would be a really fast move. I just got an opportunity. I mean, I'm locked in here. I can take it slow, take my time, you know, get good at what I'm doing, and then try to jump up, you know, and run the rat race. Or there's this really, like, sounds too good to be true opportunity over here. You know, should I go investigate that more? And, you know, the wife is all on board for it. So I started pinging Wheezy a little bit more and a little bit more. And one thing led to another, and it was just the right path because other things were going on, you know, where I was already at that were just kind of like, yeah, this long-term is not going to be the opportunity I want for myself.
Where did you see that posting? Where did Wheezy post that job?
So, Wheezy posted it up. I think it was in Jobs. And I just so happened to come across it because that's one of those ones that I had muted at the time.
In the Discord, yeah.
Yeah, in the Discord. Okay. And so he posted
another another community platform. That's what I wanted to point at. Like Twitter got you that first gig. And now, you know, different community platform you're in. You plugged into the community seems to be paying off, right?
Yeah.
Networking and networking.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to network the network. I had, like, only had conversations with Wheezy back and forth. I mean, everybody knows he's a huge cheerleader, super supportive guy. And so I've been back and forth with him on Twitter a little bit, but never really chatted with him. And so I got to know him a little bit going back and forth in the Discord in a one channel, just talking about, like, hey, what's this opportunity? What's it look like? And that's when, like, he dropped it on me that he was actually in the program. And so he had, like, firsthand experience to tell me what was going on. And so that's when kind of started that process. So at that point, twice out of the three opportunities I'd gotten, you know, networking and community had paid off once again.
It's nice to hear. Man. Yeah.
That's incredible.
So what do you have in front of you? You've got this, you said it was a 12 to 18 month ACE program that they're trying to get you to get through it in 12. What does it look like after that? Are you working directly with customers or what are you going to be doing?
Yeah. So fall into a full-time consulting engineer position, post-sales, doing deployments, things like that for customers, whether they're returning, things like that for Azure deployments. I'm on, like, the hybrid and infrastructure side. So that'll be exciting. And then hoping to develop more of, like, the infrastructure as code platform that they have going on.
Hold on. So you'll be post sales. Will you go install stuff? But it's, you know, the cloud, man, it's just, I mean,
It's right, right here.
It's right here.
We just got to reach up to install it. It's
up there. I mean, are you, I don't know, maybe I don't understand, like, you know, it's somebody else's infrastructure, right? So what do you install post? Is somebody going to want to connect to Azure and you're going to help them connect to Azure?
Yeah, it's a lot of kind of hybrid blends of like taking their, you know, their AD and moving up into the cloud. Maybe there's some greenfield deployments, things like that. My understanding is that there's a lot of, what do you call it? They're bringing over a lot of stuff into the cloud that they already had on-prem, especially yeah. with everybody going to less of a physical footprint these days with right. staff. You know, you don't need the big buildings and things like that. So they're just getting rid of physical infrastructure.
Right. So be moving people up into the cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear the cloud's a big thing.
It's as big as you want it to be.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, that's the place to be right now, right? It's a very good direction, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's for me, like the big attraction is that automation's a big one for me. That's just how my brain works. I've always liked that concept. I do like some of the coding aspect and things, so that's where like infrastructure as code comes into play. And just the mobility, I think, you know, going forward, you know, the work from home thing going on, things like that, the lack of physical hardware that people have access to, I think cloud only gets stronger over the next decade or two, which is really important for me. So I wanted to be as ahead of the curve as I could be on whatever I could do. So.
We've talked about it before, but I'm amazed at how quickly the whole model has changed to like that just distributed, you know, instead of everything's, you know, instead of going hairpinning through your hub for everything the way it was not that long ago. Now there's just stuff everywhere. It's all distributed all over the place. It happened pretty quickly. I guess the COVID thing kind of accelerated it maybe, right? With everybody at home. And I don't know. It's been amazing to watch. Like when I started not too long ago, it was all on-prem and I managed our data centers and I blinked my eyes and we're, you know, multi-cloud and everything's moving there and, you know, Agile, speed of deployment, go, go, go. Like it's, I see the benefits, right? It's real.
Yeah. I think COVID definitely had a massive impact on that. I mean, if you didn't have everybody working from home and needing the interoperability of everything like that, I don't think it would have happened for another 5 years or so. You wouldn't have sold so many people. Right. And then, you know, with the supply chain things going on too, people can't get physical hardware. It's like, well, why not go to the cloud? And at the same time, if you do it right, you know, you can be efficient in your cost and, you know, maybe save a little bit of money at that.
What's magical to me is the ability to spin up capacity instantly. Like as one example, when COVID hit, I worked for a large company and just everybody went home and we did not have the capacity with our VPN infrastructure in our data centers to accommodate that. So you were constantly getting kicked out. It would take an hour and a half to get logged in the morning and it all got spun up, you know, in a cloud provider. It was overnight. And we went from nobody could connect for weeks consistently to like, poof, there it is. You know, I mean, that's, you know, how long from a guy who's been building infrastructure in on-prem data center, it takes forever to get that crap racked, stacked, working circuits, like, you know, whatever you need to add capacity. And to be able to do it instantly in the cloud, man, that's just, the speed at which things are moving is just really insane. And the cloud enables that. It's really cool.
Yeah. It's crazy going from like, you know, building simple networks and doing, you know, all the stuff in the CCNA and my like network admin stuff, and then turn around and like hop in Azure and even like through Terraform and things like that, just spin up, here's a VNet. And within that, I can just drop subnets and it's all in just a matter of like 30 seconds. It can be spun up. I mean, all that work's been done in the background. So it's crazy to see kind of like, I don't want to say old school, but you know, it's a very traditional and, you know, physical way to do it and then go hop in the extremely virtualized side of it and see how quick it is. And
so I don't want you to give away company secrets or anything like that, but can you kind of unpack this, this ACE program? It's really intriguing to me that they bring people in that in this case, you didn't have any cloud experience, but they're willing to put you through this 12 to 18 month program. kind of at a high level, what does that program look like? Do they got you going through Azure certification programs? Are you just shadowing other team members all day? What does it look like?
Yeah, so I've only been there a couple of weeks too, so take everything I'd say with a grain of salt. But and if anybody from CDW is listening, I've only been there 2 weeks, so take it with a grain of salt. But so, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty well-kept secret. It's one of those things where, I mean, CDW is massive. I think, you know, well over the 10,000 employee mark. And they're constantly trying to, you know, keep the pipeline stacked with like talented individuals and passionate individuals. And that was a big thing that was thrown to me. I think I had 5 or 6 interviews during the process with people from the program and above the program. And, you know, it was all management, things like that. Some technical interviews, some consulting interviews, things like that. And what they're really looking for is somebody who's passionate and driven. They said, you know, we can teach you the technology, but we need somebody who's going to show up and want to do it. And also somebody who can speak to people. Because, you know, as AJ would know, being a consultant and things like that, you have to talk to a variety of people and, you know, be able to translate everything that's going on effectively on both sides of it. So
secret sauce, Chris. Secret sauce. Passion, drive, and communication. It's, I hear this a lot and I've experienced it myself. We can teach you the tech, but we see your passion. We can see that you're driven and you're able to communicate. Oh my God. There are the three things right there.
I've got the cheat code, right? Like I was a manager for 8 out of those 13 years in food service. So, you know, I know what to look for in people and I know what I was looking for. So if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right and be that person that gets noticed because, you know, call it cheating or maybe even brown nosing, but, you know, kind of you have to know how to play the game a little bit too as well. So.
We have to be good with people. And that's what I was thinking as you were telling your story earlier in the restaurant business. I mean, it's a people business, right? Like you're working with people, you're feeding people. It's, you're constantly interfacing with people and communication and nonverbal communication, picking up on cues. Like, yeah, you build all those skills, right? In that gig and now it's transferable. But I've been given jobs, by the way, that I was underqualified for. And they told me the same exact thing. We can teach you the tech. We see you're passionate. You know, home lab, community engagement, whatever. You know, we can see that you're driven, you have certifications, you study a lot, you know, and you can communicate, and that's what we need. And I've heard that from a lot. I've been on a lot of interviews. You just got me all excited. Those three things, I think, have been my secret sauce so far, and it seems to be working for you too.
Yeah, I mean, people want to work with people who they like, you know, and they can get along with, and we've all worked with the wrong person. And so, you know, especially when you're going to invest so much into somebody from a technical aspect, like better be somebody who, you know, is going to show up, want to do it. You can turn your head and not have to worry about what they're doing in the background. And like in this program, I mean, I'm sitting at home, you know, and being that work from home makes it even more challenging because for me, I don't have that face-to-face contact, like you said, you know, where I can kind of start to network in person, which is a little bit easier. Now trying to do everything over meetings, virtual meetings and things like that. So a curveball for me, but, you know, having the accountability and things to do my studies, do my, you know, keep up on my tasks, things like that, hop in and network where I can and do what I have to do. You know, that's going to be, you know, where you start showing off and showing that you're really passionate about what you're doing because you're just keeping up on everything without anybody telling you to.
And I didn't mean to pivot us away from Tim's question. It's just a fantastic question. I just got excited. So you're doing the certification stuff. You're learning Azure. You're shadowing people. Is that the crux of the program? How are they getting you skilled up specifically?
Yeah, it's, I mean, imagine just like college courses or anything like that. They, you know, they build upon each other and there's like a soft skill side to it as well as a technical side and they blend in together. There's cert tracks that we have to go down that are predefined for us and being like a Microsoft partner. We have pretty good access to all those Azure stuff. We've got like O'Reilly Learning and LinkedIn and CBT and things like that. So we kind of have keys to the kingdom when it comes to education and resources, which is really nice. I'm thankful for that because every time I've needed something, it's been there.
And you're afforded the time during the day to learn stuff, right? Like, is your job right now just to learn, get certified? And
yeah, so really for the next 12 months, my whole job is to be learn to be the best Azure engineer that I can be. We've got, like I said, we blend in like those shadowing and consulting. So you get that side of it. And that takes up part of your time. But as well, like right now, 60, 70, 80% of my time is just burnt up with studying and going through all that technical content, trying to get through it.
That's fantastic. You're going to be a beast at the end of a year. Just kicking butt.
Yeah, by like...
what do you mean, gonna be?
Well, you know, I mean, an Azure beast, right? Sorry.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting. So I just had like my first meeting and went over goals. I still have to get my Security Plus, which I've been studying for like 4 months now. But I'll have that done at the end of the month. I'm going to sit for my AZ 104, which is like the intermediate, like admin exam. I'll sit for that before the end of the year and hopefully pass that. And then by the end of February, I'll probably have the Linux like certified administrator. And then by May, I plan on having the Azure expert certs. So it's going to be fast paced.
Wow.
How does one lab for cloud studies? I kind of know the answer because I was on the AWS track for a minute, but just for people listening, you know, you said earlier you built a physical lab. So if you're studying cloud, how do you lab cloud?
Yeah. So the really cool thing about that is that Azure, like Microsoft, offers a 12-month free trial with like $150, $200 credit for your first month. And then AWS has the same thing for like 12 months. You can hop on. They have a free tier so you can go play with things. And so if you go hop on, like Microsoft has a really good setup where on Microsoft Learn, it takes you through all the topics that they built themselves that attach to the different certs. And then, you know, you can go take that because some of them have integrated labs. Go hop on your free account and just start playing around with it. And as long as you don't mess anything up, which if you're trying to learn, you can learn your billing and subscriptions and things like that. You don't spend any of your personal money and you can have a basically a free virtual lab.
Set billing alerts, right? That's the key there.
Yeah. I got scared. I got one this morning from AWS and I haven't played with that in like 4 months. Hopefully it was only like $7. I've seen people with like 5-digit bills come through because I didn't shut something off.
Yeah, I've heard that. Whoops, I forgot to turn something off. Whoopsie.
Yeah, and we've got
the $5 alert on that one.
Yeah, we've got like an allowance at work, which is nice. And then on top of that, it's pretty restricted so that we don't go spending too much company money.
Man, this is just absolutely incredible. I hate to say it, but we're coming to the end of our hour here, Chris. I know, right? anything that you want to like cap this off with, you know, advice that you have for people either looking to break in or jump from one career to another, such as you have done, what's the best words of wisdom that you would want to give them?
I think the one thing is that you've got to give it a try. And it's worth it if you put the effort into it. The opportunities are out there. You're going to have to go outside of your comfort zone to find them. But they're there if you're willing to go. If you're willing to go find them, they're there for you. And so it might not seem like it at first. I mean, I went 6-8 months and it didn't seem, I didn't know if it was going to happen. And then all of a sudden it clicked and, you know, here I am now. So, you know, be networking, always be labbing, all those fun things. But just put yourself out there.
I love it. From like culinary master chef to cloud network engineer. What an incredible journey. Chris, thank you so much for joining us this week. Thank you so much to all of our Patreons. If you're interested in joining the Patreon and hanging out with us every week here, you can do so at patreon.com/artofneteng. And Chris, if people want to follow you, learn more about you, where can they do that? How can they do that?
So it's IPVPHO on all the handles. IPVPHO.
It's so good, by the way. I just want to give you props. It's a great handle.
That's awesome.
I actually tell people what pho is.
It's a Vietnamese soup, noodle soup. And I got to give it to AJ. He botched it one day on the winds. And so. That was enough for me to switch it from what it used to be.
What it used to be was good as well.
What was it before? I forget.
It was Bytes to Bits. But even I would forget it. I'd be like, is it Bits to Bytes or Bytes to Bits? And then everybody else watched it, and I was like, okay, if nobody else can remember it, then I'm not sure.
So your blog is still Bytes to Bits. We got to work on some branding there. But I do want to just give your blog a shout out because, I'm sorry, AJ, I know we're wrapping up, but I wanted I have been playing with GitHub off and on, right? Doing a little bit at work, and I know how to do what I have to do, but I didn't really understand what's happening under the hood in certain things. And when I saw, I forget where I saw it, but I'm using GitHub to take notes, blog post on Bits to Bytes, kind of put it all together for me. Like, I mean, I didn't even know you could do that. First of all, I didn't know you could take notes, in GitHub. So it's just I really like your blog. I really like the content you've been putting out. The GitHub, for me, for a guy who struggles with coding and concepts like GitHub and CI/CD, blah, blah, blah. Like, I really like how you distill this stuff down, and you have a good way of describing it. And you helped me with GitHub, and I'm a guy who's been using GitHub for a year at work. So, good blog. I like your content. Sorry, AJ. So where can we find you? Is it going to stay Bits to Bytes, Bytes to Bits for the blog?
I'm working on, there's some more in the hopper for all of that. That's not like, it probably won't happen this year, but yeah, for now it's there. I think it's linked on my Twitter and on my LinkedIn. But there's more to come with that for sure.
All right. And we will drop all of those links in the show notes, the Twitter, the blog, and the LinkedIn. And you can make sure you connect and follow Chris wherever he's at. Chris, thank you so much for joining us this week, man.
Yeah. Thank you, gentlemen.
Congratulations. Congratulations to you. You've definitely earned it. And we're going to keep watching you. Can't wait to see what you do.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And that's a wrap. Thank you. And we'll see you next week on another episode of The Art of Network Engineering. Hey, everyone. This is AJ. If you like what you heard today, then make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcatcher. Smash that bell icon to get notified of all of our future episodes. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Art of Net Eng. That's Art of NETENG. You can also find us on the web at artofnetworkengineering.com, where we post all of our show notes. You can read blog articles from the co-hosts and guests, and also a lot more news and info from the networking world. Thanks for listening.